an examination of some of those scriptures by which the doctrine of total depravity is attempted to be proved. Having now shown that the doctrine of total hereditary depravity is the doctrine of the popular creeds, we shall proceed to an examination of some of those scriptures which are supposed to prove this doctrine. Perhaps no passage is more frequently quoted in proof of total universal depravity than Genesis chapter 6 and verse 5. God saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. In order to give the reader a fair view of the doctrine of this text, we must also quote Genesis chapter 6 and verse 12. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted its way upon the earth. Now, it does appear to us that the 12th verse of this chapter explains the 5th. The 5th verse declares that the wickedness of man was great, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. That this verse is truly expressive of the moral condition of the human family at that time is cordially admitted. The question then is, by what means were these antediluvians reduced to this state of moral degradation? By the first sin of Adam, reply the creeds. The 12th verse, however, does not answer the question in this way. All flesh had corrupted its way upon the earth is the emphatic answer from the mouth of unerring truth. Men are blamed as being the actors in corrupting themselves, a thing which by no means could have been done if they had been rendered totally corrupt by the sin of Adam. How could all flesh by nature totally corrupt corrupt itself? Can total corruption corrupt itself? This very passage, which is so frequently wrested from its connection in order to prove the total universal corruption of human nature, does in fact disprove that doctrine. Except it can be truly said that a mass which is totally corrupt can corrupt itself, which is impossible. The corruption of the antediluvians was contracted progressively. For more than 1,500 years they had been running this downward road. At length, just before the flood, God looked around upon the guilty race, and his emotion on beholding the wickedness of man is expressed in the strong language of Oriental hyperbole. It repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. Why? Because all flesh had corrupted itself. The Lord resolved to destroy all flesh by the waters of a deluge. Why? Because all flesh had corrupted itself. The Lord, however, had determined to perpetuate the human race through the family of Noah. But if the children of Noah's family were totally depraved, they were as corrupt as the antediluvians. If Noah and his family, as well as the whole antediluvian multitudes, were by nature totally depraved, then those who were saved in the ark were as morally corrupt as those who were drowned. For no being can be more than totally depraved. Therefore, on this hypothesis, there was the same reason for destroying Noah and his family that there was for destroying the antediluvians, both parties being by nature equally corrupt. If we suppose, as indeed has been proved, that the moral depravity of the antediluvians was contracted progressively, and that the evil communications of corrupt parents corrupted the susceptible minds of their rising offspring, a most obvious reason presents itself for the destruction of the antediluvians and the preservation of Noah and his family. Noah was a comparatively righteous man. His example would consequently be much better than that of the people whom God had determined to destroy. Therefore, by drowning the vile and abominable antediluvians and placing it in a conspicuous position, the succeeding generations of our race would not only be cut off from the influence of antediluvian example, but would have the benefit of the good example of Noah. This was a worthy motive, and justifies the ways of God to men. We shall be asked, however, whether the fact that all men from Adam to the present time have sinned is not a proof that all men have derived a totally depraved nature from Adam. The reader will please to notice that we have not denied that all the human family may have received great injury from the sin of Adam. We intend to give our views of this subject afterwards. In this place, however, we must observe that we cannot perceive that the universality of sin affords the shadow of a proof of native hereditary depravity, much less of total depravity. Just look at the first sin that was committed. Read the history of that transaction. Do you not perceive with what readiness our mother Eve and afterwards our father Adam reach forth their hands to grasp the prohibited fruit? Now, if the readiness of all men to commit sin is a proof that all men have been by nature totally depraved, will not the readiness of our first parents to commit sin prove that they were totally depraved before they had ever sinned? Besides, many of the posterity of Adam have resisted the most powerful assaults of the devil. If, then, we consider a failure to resist temptation a proof of total depravity, must we not, by parity of reasoning, consider the successful resistance of temptation a proof of perfect exemption from depravity? But each of these suppositions proves too much and therefore proves nothing. Consequently, the fact that all men have sinned affords no evidence of total hereditary depravity. But this, by the way. Having shown that the antediluvians had corrupted themselves until every imagination of the thoughts of their hearts was only evil continually, and that they were blamed and destroyed for having corrupted themselves, we are prepared for the consideration of another text much used as proof of total universal depravity. Isaiah chapter 1, verses 5 and 6. The text reads, "Why should you be stricken any more? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart is faint. From the sole of the foot even unto the head there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores." In order that the reader may understand this subject, we will also quote the fourth verse. "Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. They have forsaken the Lord, they have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger, they have gone away backward." The prophet is here speaking of the children of Israel, and that they were as bad as he represents them we can easily admit. The fourth verse, however, informs us how they had become depraved. It calls them corruptors. Corruptors of whom? Why, each man was a corrupter of himself, and all were corruptors of one another. Need we repeat that that which has been already wholly corrupted cannot be again corrupted? We do consider this proposition to be self-evident and will not therefore attempt to prove it. Again, it is said, they have forsaken the Lord. They have gone away backwards. Are totally depraved persons in the favor of the Lord and in a state of unison with Him? If not, how can such persons forsake Him? How can a totally depraved person go away backwards? Away from what? From total depravity? This, then, must be an advance to purity. If by nature all men are totally depraved, they are by nature thrown as far backward as they can ever go, that is, into total corruption. Now, is it not evident that these persons received their wounds and their bruises by forsaking the Lord, by going away backwards, by rebelling against Him? Thus did their whole head become sick and their whole heart faint. For this the Lord blames them. Not one word, however, does He say concerning Adam's first sin. He blames them for their own sins and not for Adam's. Whatever injury man may have received from Adam's first sin is our misfortune, not our fault. Next, Psalm 51, verse 5. "Behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me." Psalm 58, verse 3. "The wicked are estranged from the womb, they go astray as soon as they are born, speaking lies." Isaiah 48, and verse 8. "For I knew that thou wouldest deal treacherously, and wast called a transgressor from the womb." These passages are often quoted to prove the doctrine of total hereditary depravity. They do, however, by no means prove it. If we interpret them literally and give them all the force which by any fair rules of interpretation they can be supposed to possess, they prove nothing more than that human nature has been somewhat defiled by Adam's sin, and this is a doctrine which we have not denied. There is certainly a great difference between being shapen in iniquity and being wholly depraved in every faculty of the soul and in every member of the body. A thing may be defiled and yet not wholly defiled, unclean and yet not wholly unclean. But that total depravity is not taught in these passages we prove positively by a declaration found in connection with the passage last quoted. Behold, I have refined thee, but not with silver. I have chosen thee in the furnace of affliction. Isaiah chapter 58 and verse 10. Now, if by the sin of Adam these persons had been wholly corrupted, or even if they had wholly corrupted themselves by their own sins, by what means could they have been refined? There was nothing to refine. Metals may be refined, but by no chemical process of which we have ever heard can mere dross be purified. We are, however, after all, of the opinion that these passages are highly figurative. The Orientalists were much disposed to the use of the most highly figurative language. David says in Psalm 22, verse 6, I am a worm and no man. And Isaiah says, all nations are before God as nothing, and they are counted by him less than nothing and vanity. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 17. The prophetic scriptures are full of figures such as these. Now, is there any man of sane mind who, by the first of these passages just quoted, would attempt to prove that men are not men but worms, or, from the second passage, that all the nations are in reality nothing, nay, less than nothing? We hesitate not to say that the Bible and common sense as much justify this interpretation as that. We are told that the wicked go astray from the womb, speaking lies. Not literally, however, for we know that an infant for some time after its birth can neither speak truth nor falsehood. Let the reader therefore apply a rule of interpretation to these scriptures as liberal as that by which he would interpret David's words where he says, I am a worm and no man, and he can never consider them as proof of total hereditary depravity. We have sometimes heard persons say, Ah, the scriptures declare that man is born to evil as the sparks fly upward. We must, however, inform the reader that this scripture, like many others, is of the home manufacture. There is a passage which says that man is born to trouble as the sparks fly upward. Job chapter 5, verse 7. This, however, is another scripture hyperbole. For we know that although men have many troubles, yet the most of them have many comforts. We have no doubt, however, but that if evil had been in the text, instead of trouble, it would have been used by many an erudite scripturian as irresistible proof of total hereditary depravity. And yet, even if evil, instead of trouble, had been in the text, it would no more have proved total depravity than as it now stands it proves total universal and unceasing trouble.